listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm thrilled to be back on the microphone. My name is Willie Dills, and I missed last week and then a week before. I've just been intermittent lately, but glad to be here. Glad to be talking about the Giants, who are 7-3, by the way, in spring training, which is a good sign. And, of course, I'm joined by my co-hosts, the one, the only, the Ben Lee. Ben, welcome to the show.
Whoa! I got a the now.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
You were the Ben Lee. I didn't know that you were the Ben Lee until about 5 seconds ago. But
probably a lot of Ben Lees out there.
That's true. But I know Ben Lee, and those Ben Lees are no Ben Lee. So that's all I'm saying. Of course, we're also joined by Chad King. Chad King, welcome to the show, buddy.
Chad King is the greatest podcaster of all time. I figured if you threw a "the" in front of Ben's name, I could start talking about myself in the third person, like Ricky Henderson.
I think you should, man. Yeah, Ricky Henderson steals a lot of bases. So does Chad King. I think you should totally do that.
I'm the greatest ever.
So, guys, I wasn't here last week, and if you've been listening to the show, I missed another show recently. I've just been crazy busy, but I got to say, so being as busy as I have been lately, it's been really kind of a bummer not being able to keep up exactly with what's going on. But I was out to dinner the other night at Tommy's, which is a great Mexican place in San Francisco, if you've ever been.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of tequila, a lot of different kinds of tequila. If you want to spend $50 on a tequila shot, head over to Tommy's.
It's kind of sad because they used to be known a lot more for the food, which is what I grew up eating, because that's an awesome spot. And my family used to eat from there a lot, but now it's known for the tequila more than it is for the food.
Well, we were there the other day, and I'm sitting there eating my food, and all of a sudden I look up at the TV, and Giants baseball is on. And I just warmed my heart. It was just one of those moments where you're just so glad to be a Giants fan and see it finally back again. And it was cool. Like, as soon as I turned the game on, I think within about an inning or so, Aubrey Huff had hit a home run, and I was just feeling, we ended up losing that game pretty badly, I think. That was the Brewers game. Mm-hmm. Still, it was fantastic to watch, you know, the Giants out there playing again. It was kind of funny. It was Aubrey Huff followed by Brandon Belt. So it was kind of like, are they testing these guys? Like, they're like, we're literally going to put them right next to each other.
Was that the Huff Belt Pill Day?
I think it was. Yeah, Pill was right behind him. It was just super fun, and it got me so pumped about the season. Just watching baseball again and seeing it out there. And there's a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. So I say we just jump right on in. Let's talk first about Lincecum. He struggled a bit. There's a few things that are notable about his performance, though. So I'll just give his line real quick. He gave up 7 hits, 5 runs, a walk, had 46 pitches and 2 innings. Not great stuff, obviously, but the key here is really that this was his kind of start to get his arm kind of back into the slot, you know. And he said afterwards he didn't throw a slider, he didn't throw any breaking pitches at all. It was basically all fastball changeups. So when you're throwing all fastballs and changeups, can we even take anything away from this start, really? I mean, is this anything that either of you guys are really concerned about?
Well, I mean, especially Lincecum's changeup is essentially a fastball. It's basically a two-seamer with a ton of break. So, I mean, if guys are seeing stuff pretty much all at the same speed, they're probably in similar locations. And, you know, spring training, you almost always see guys, every time they're out there, they're working on something until maybe their final start. I'm inclined to say it doesn't say a whole lot yet. I feel like if we see this the entirety of spring training and we don't see at least one outing from him that he kind of tightens it up, maybe I'll get a little worried.
Yeah.
But that's with Lincecum, because he tends to start, you know, he tends to have his occasional downs and ups. I feel like I'm not seeing this as a trend of the season to come so much as maybe a trend of the first start or two.
Okay. Chad, what did you think about his start? Was it concerning at all?
No, not at all, especially with the pitch selection that you just highlighted right there. If you look at his line from the last 3 years, I mean, one or two starts in the regular season end up like this. So I'm not saying it's just a bad day. It could have been a bad day combined with the fact that he's not using a slider or any of the other pitches. He's just working on his mechanics, finding the slot, and he's just using two pitches right now. And especially if the guys know that just two pitches are coming, they have less to worry about. So no, I'm not worried at all. But I do agree with Ben that, you know, every single start, I know he's probably slotted for three more spring training starts. Yeah, I might be a little bit concerned, but it's amazing. You look back over time and some of these stars who just in Major League Baseball or even teams who have really bad springs end up just turning on that button, if you will, for the regular season, and they're fine. So, I mean, like Atlanta's 1-9 right now, and I'm already seeing articles about people who are concerned for the Braves going, oh, I don't know, they're 1-9 in spring training. It's like,
they're not managing these like regular games. You know what I mean? That it's, if you're down by a couple runs, you're not going to do everything possible as a manager to try to squeeze two runs out. You're just going to continue to go through your rotation of putting in the young guys, taking guys out when you feel like they've had enough. It's you're not even managing to win or lose a game at this point.
Yeah, when your closer comes in the fourth inning, you know, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got a 7-3 record in the spring training, but that's currently tied with Oakland and Seattle, which aren't exactly two teams that you're offhand expecting to go racing for the top of the charts once the season starts. So, you know, it's hard to justify some of the results that you see and say, well, you know, this obviously indicates that this is how they'll do during the season. We tore the cover off the ball last spring training too, and you know, then people started tearing the cover off of us and things went downhill real quickly.
I do want to keep an eye on his velocity because apparently it was down around 90 to 92 it peaked at, and I know it's actually been attenuating over the last few seasons. I remember when he first came up, I watched his debut at a local bar. I mean, I know part of it was adrenaline, but he was popping at 97, 98.
Yeah.
And throughout the rest of the year, that's pretty much where he stayed. And then the next year is kind of 95, 96.
95, and yeah.
Well, and then last year, it's really 92 to 94. So I'm just wondering, is this something where he's just becoming more of a pitcher instead of a thrower, or is he losing velocity because of mechanics? Yeah, I mean, it could be part of the whole plan where he's like, look, I don't need to throw 98 miles an hour to get these guys out, and the proof is in the pudding. Or is there something mechanically behind it?
You know, I tend to think that there's a little bit of both. I think he's definitely probably realized after pitching as many years as he has that, you don't need that all the time. And Kruko talks about this all the time watching these guys. He says, look, you know, guys come up. Remember Kerry Wood when he came up? I mean, all he just tried to do was just blow everybody away. And you can't really sustain that. You know, the guys who are able to maintain, like somebody like, say, Roger Clemens or something like that, you know, he throws hard, but he definitely knew when to back off a little bit. But I do think there's also something to he's had mechanical issues throughout his career where it kind of goes away. So he has to get to that perfect spot to have that full velocity. And that's hard to get to when you got so many moving parts, you know. I wanted to mention real quick, though, on the other end, Barry Zito had an extremely good outing. And again, I feel like this doesn't matter at all.
It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's encouraging to see him have a good outing. But also, he might be working on some stuff that these guys haven't seen before. So they're not coming up there seeing the normal Zito. And, you know, they're not getting a long enough look to adjust during a season. You know what I mean? They're just like, oh, this is interesting what he's doing. I've heard he's changed a couple things. So, you know, all these pitching performances thus far, I almost feel like need to just get chucked out the window. And you really got to look at, like, the last start for each starter and the last couple of bullpen appearances for each of the bullpen guys. Because right now it's just there's no way to gauge what's really going on. They're not playing baseball the way they're going to play. You know, come April. So,
well, this is definitely, you know, fix things period of spring training, especially early on before they start making cuts and sending guys down to minor league camp. You know, we've barely heard about anybody getting moved back to minor league camp so far, especially not a lot of the guys who sort of either have their chance of making the big team or are really showing why they need some time to stick around. Like, you remember when Posey first was in spring training camp, everybody thought there was a chance he might stick with the club by the end of it, but he ended up being one of the last guys to get dropped because he was having such a good spring training. I think we're going to see something very similar to that with Tommy Joseph and possibly Andrew Susak. Possibly one of the first basemen as well, depending on how things pan out. But I think that definitely with a couple of the younger guys who are making good showings, you know, Tyler Graham, Tommy Joseph. I think we're going to see them stick around for a while, but I don't think we're going to see them make the big club.
No.
But we're going to see them. They're going to see them stick in for a while, and that changes the way the lineup works. We're not going to see our big games, our opening day lineup, really roll out all in one piece until anywhere from the last week to opening day itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're not going to see the final scores reflect what our full team is capable of. So let's talk real quick about one of the other pitchers on our team who, you know, we're not going to talk about his spring training stuff necessarily right now, but let's talk about the guy as a whole as far as where he fits in the rotation this year. And I'm talking about Madison Bumgarner, who Bruce Jenkins wrote an article recently about how the Giants may have a third ace in this kid. And, you know, I mean, we know physically what he's like. He's a big guy, 6'5", 220 or something like that. I mean, he's just a big dude and has a real kind of easy motion and has kind of proven himself in a couple of years to actually be potentially a third ace, which if the Giants, you know, we're keeping Tim Lincecum, and apparently the news is good on Matt Cain. They're saying he'll probably become the seventh pitcher in MLB to have a $100 million contract pretty soon. And
it's only fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much locked that that's going to happen, whether it's for the Giants or not. But
agreed.
Every indicator recently has been that he's probably going to stick around, which means that we would potentially have three ace quality guys for the next at least couple of years here, if this is really how it is. Now, Chad, I'm curious to know what you think. Do you think that Bruce Jenkins is kind of right on here? Do you think Madison Bumgarner does have that ace potential as a 22-year-old?
Yeah, I think he has the potential, maybe not as much as with much conviction as Bruce has. I do think he has it because of his mental stoicism. I don't think anyone or anything really bugs the guy.
It doesn't seem that way. You're very right. Yeah.
He does seems not like seem easily rattled. Yeah.
No, it seems like if he got into some sort of domestic dispute, there really wouldn't be a dispute. He'd just be like, whatever, honey, you can do whatever you want. You know, I mean, so I think that's going to serve him, you know, really most of the way. I mean, he definitely has the physical talent. He's a big guy, but he doesn't get too hyped, doesn't get too overly dramatic about anything. I think the potential is there, but, you know, Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum are proven. And so I read this article and I kind of disagreed with him saying, hey, he could be the ace on the staff now.
Yeah.
Without any disrespect to the other two. It's kind of like, well, you know, maybe he's going for a line, you know, or a headline or something like that. But yeah, I mean, hey, if those two guys perform like they normally do, and Mad Bum outperforms them, we'll take it.
I tend to think that that his numbers will look great too, being a third starter, because he'll go up against the other team's third starters. You know what I mean? It's like the perfect spot to be when you got the talent he does, and you've got two guys ahead of you as good as those guys are. What do you think, Ben? What do you think about Bumgarner?
I mean, right now, Bumgarner is easily a number two starter on a lot of teams, I feel like. I don't know that he's necessarily a number one on a team that isn't like the Pirates right now. But I feel like he's showed us that potential last year. You know, obviously, a lot of us watched the one really, really painful start, you know, with the 8 runs, 1 inning, how many batters, I don't know. But I would have to say that what we saw of him the rest of the way was very, very solid. And I mean, he put up some of the best numbers on the entire team last year in certain categories out of the starting rotation, at least. And he was, in some ways, the Sergio Romo of the rotation. He was extremely effective with a couple of bad outings that are magnified because he's a starter and expected to go with more depth. And so I got to say, with Bumgarner, I actually feel pretty good about him. I don't know that I see him being the ace on the staff. I didn't get to read the article. So, I mean, from the way that I heard Willie kind of say it, which is more of he could shape up to be on the level of Lincecum and Cain. I think that he's really close to it. I think that we could see a three ace rotation as early as this year or next year, assuming we keep all these guys around.
Think about teams with that like kind of big three kind of makeup, you know. I mean, look at like the Phillies or the A's from like the late '80s, early '90s. I mean, it was just three guys. You weren't going to have a losing streak, and
one of those guys was going to be a stopper.
Yeah, and if your fourth and fifth guy end up having a good game, you know, potentially you're looking at like 8-game win streaks, you know, pretty consistently. So it's just one of those things. Like, it's really exciting to think he does have the potential to be on the level of not maybe the, you know, Lincecum or Kane, but maybe some of the aces from other teams who don't have Lincecum and Kane, you know? And yeah, he'll be going against the third guy in most of the time on their rotation. So it could shape up to be a really fantastic year for him if we can get some offense, obviously.
And I mean, every time Bumgarner goes out, he's one of those, like, you feel like he could spin a gem. There are some guys that they'll go out and, like, you know, with Vogelsong, it was always kind of a surprise when he would, even though we started to expect it a little bit. But he was never that guy who would come out and be like, yeah, I feel like this is going to happen. It was more like, oh, if we have a good day, this could happen again. And it often would, which was great. But Bumgarner projects that. He's the one, he goes out there and you're like, all right, we got, you know, he gets the nickname of being Mad Bum. He gets the, you know, he gets the confidence of the team. He's one of those guys that, especially after the postseason in 2010, every time Bumgarner goes out there, I feel really good about it.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of projections,
doesn't always prove me right, but
Zips has got him at a 3.45 ERA and Bill James with a 3.36. So maybe that's the barometer he's going to shoot for. But I mean, that's almost Matt Cain territory historically.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I mean, hell, if he meets those expectations, I'm happy with it. But Bruce, of course, completely expects him to blow those projections out of the water.
Yeah, we will see. But another guy that a lot of people expect a lot of things out of right now, and he's kind of showing a little bit of signs of coming back around, is Aubrey Huff. Of course, obviously, as with anything, we can't really judge his performance necessarily yet. But he does have a couple home runs, and the home runs he's hit have looked pretty nice, and he looks like he's swinging the bat well. He's seeing the ball, hitting .316 right now in spring training. Both of those home runs have been solo shots, so he doesn't have any other RBIs, but he's taking a couple walks as well. Obviously, there's only 19 at-bats, so you can't really make too much of a prediction on things. And also, his 2011 spring training, he actually hit .369. With 6 home runs, and 16 RBIs, so it doesn't
hard to count that out.
It doesn't really translate, obviously. But considering his year last year, Ben, how are you feeling right now about Aubrey Huff's bat? Does it look like it's improved? Does it look like the offseason stuff has worked?
I mean, I haven't gotten to see too many of his at bats yet. But I mean, from what I'm hearing, I don't know that I've got the. I feel like I've got some of the confidence that he's making strides. I don't feel solidly like Huff is back yet, per se. Okay. But that, you know, it's always kind of you sort of see what you want to support your own opinion. And I haven't been convinced yet that Huff's back. Yeah. I hope he is. And the numbers definitely show that there's something that's getting back into his swing. But I mean, conversely, Brandon Belt is .333 in 24 at bats. You know, same number of home runs, and it's kind of like, oh boy, this is going to be a tough one.
Bruce Bochy's going to have a real decision to make, but luckily, both of these guys have proven that they're willing to and able to move into the outfield. While you do lose defensively, they will definitely do it. But obviously, our outfield is a little crowded as well, too, with guys who are similar. So, Chad,
last year where it was like, well, we need a fielder. Okay, well, we can move Belt out there because we've only got some. And now it's like, okay, so we've got like 4 or 5 people that can go into that outfield and do damage. It's like,
Chad, what have you thought so far about Aubrey Huff's spring?
I honestly think he's going to fall in between his 2010 season and last year. Okay. I don't think he's going to achieve what he did 2 years ago. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year.
Do you think the Giants will be happy with that if he does fall somewhere in between?
I think they'd be satisfied. Okay. You know, I don't know if they would be necessarily happy, but what I'm really interested to see is, assuming he's going to kind of have a 270 kind of year, maybe, you know, 10 to 15 bombs. Something like that. It's like, I wish, you know, for his contract, he was doing a little bit more than that. What it's going to mean down the road in terms of playing time with Brandon Belt and Buster Posey and whoever else might be in the mix, because I don't know what his personal makeup is in terms of how he might be affected by losing playing time. But I think the Giants have to start with him, especially if he has a solid spring. He's clearly going to be the starting first baseman, but, you know, come June, if he's hitting .250 or .230 or .210 or whatever, and they make a call saying, hey, we're going to get a Belt in there more often, what that might do to his psyche. Because last year, he didn't really lose any playing time. In fact, I think, who was it? Was it the New York Times that called him the National League's least valuable player?
Yeah.
Because he had the at-bats that qualified.
Yeah.
Him for the MVP, and they're like, man, this guy was so bad. He had so many at bats, and he still didn't have the numbers. So, you know, I'm hoping that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I think a decision will come about a month or so in, but I think either way, he's definitely going to get a fair shake for the first month and a half.
I feel like the time off might actually do him some good, though, if he gets a little bit of time off, but enough that he's really losing serious playing time. Maybe then we want to worry about it.
Yeah.
But we saw, you know, Huff got gas. And even in 2010, when he was having such an on year, you could see him start getting gassed by the end. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky enough that he still muscled out quite a lot of really good times for us in 2010. But just you could just see him start wearing down over the season.
One guy that you're not really looking at his performance necessarily, but just him, throwing the ball as hard as he's supposed to throw the ball and actually pitching without pain was Brian Wilson, who actually looked really, really good. He only pitched one inning, nine pitches, seven of them for strikes, and he was locating, and he looked good. He allowed a single, but then there was an out with a strikeout with a stolen base or a caught stealing. And got out of the inning really quickly with very little damage. And if anything, this is kind of a confidence builder. I went out and I threw, and it was fine. I know we've talked about Romo as compared to Brian Wilson. But Chad, I'm curious to know, what are you hoping for? Would you hope to have Romo step into that role, or are you hoping that Brian Wilson comes back with old school Brian Wilson numbers?
No, I want old school Brian Wilson numbers. Yeah. Romo still would have to prove himself in all situations against left-handers, which he hasn't done yet. I mean, clearly he has a new pitch, the new changeup that he's going to be using this year exclusively. Well, I shouldn't say exclusively, but one of the reasons is actually to show Boach that he can go ahead and get left-handers out. That being said, hey, 2010 Brian Wilson, even with his torture, it'd be fine with me. The good thing is that he was using his cutter today, and he had been using it in BP earlier in the week.
Yeah, he kind of went away.
So that's
from
a really
that
good sign.
Year. That was one of those.
Was kind of one of the indications that he was having that stress on his elbow.
Yeah,
because the cutter is what puts the most stress on his elbow. So he was going away from it, probably to baby his arm a little bit.
And he went almost exclusively to the two seam fastball, which I feel like was a little bit to compensate for the fact that without the cutter, he didn't have a lot of other pitches with movement.
It was really a slider, which is also pretty rough on your elbow too. Anything that has a ton of movement is just going to be real rough on you. And so,
if you look at
a lot of four seam, two seam stuff.
If you look at 2010, it was pretty much exclusively the four seam fastball and the cutter. I mean, that was what he was throwing down the stretch, and you kind of knew it was going to be one or the other. He never really did anything else. And
he lost a lot of confidence in his slider in 2010 too.
Yeah, and last year it just felt like we were going to see a lot of two seam fastballs, and every now and then he would kind of lose control of it because that thing would cut away pretty fast, And it seemed like when he was giving up walks, he was missing away with that two seamer quite a bit, and putting guys on base. He's trying to locate it, but just letting it get away from him. So I would like to see him go back to a more of a controlled four-seam and cutter type of look, because I feel like that worked for him really well, and there wasn't a lot of reason to change necessarily unless it was something to do with his arm. So good to know that he went out there without pain, and we'll talk about our final story here, which is, of course, Tommy Joseph, who has kind of been making waves, and there's always a story like this every year. There's some guy who comes up and kind of out of nowhere, nobody's really talking about Tommy Joseph, but kind of out of nowhere ends up shocking people a little bit. So I know, Ben, you threw this in there, and what have you seen from this kid? Do you think he's got any chance to bounce up to the big club this year?
This year, I'd say yes. Beginning of the year, I'd say definitely no. Nobody has any illusions about Tommy Joseph making the big club, but the fact remains he has shown off a lot of power. He's hitting some home runs. He's hitting some big hits, and people sort of expected it from him when he came into big league camp this year. But at the same time, he had a really good line when he was in the minors. And it's worth pointing out that Joseph is somebody that's been pretty highly regarded at pretty much every stop that he's made so far. But the fact remains, you don't know how that's going to translate into big league numbers. And so seeing in big league camp, you're finally getting to see a little bit of that. And I mean, this is a guy who, in San Jose last year hit 270 with 22 home runs. And I mean, in San Jose, the California League tends to be a little bit of a I want to say the California League's a bit of a pitcher's league, but I can never get that one quite right. But shame on me. But the fact remains, he spent a lot of time between catcher and first base. 22 home runs is a pretty decent amount of pop, and that's actually starting to translate to the big league level, which nobody was really expecting. The difference, though, with the number of catchers that we've got vying for that main position, Joseph really doesn't fit in anywhere. And because he's a young guy, because he's got options, he hasn't been put on the 40-man roster yet, I don't see them starting him off with the big club. I do see a possibility, depending on how he plays in, it's bound to be either Richmond or Fresno. And if Hector Sanchez is getting the starting at-bats in Fresno, I think Tommy Joseph probably gets the starting at-bats in Double A.
Yeah.
If we see that, then I think it's possible that we see Joseph come up in September for a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's too likely unless he is absolutely destroying the ball, like, you know, leaving it in shreds with flames bursting from them off the bat. I don't think it's too likely that we see him any earlier than September.
I think he's just a little bit behind he's kind of fourth fiddle or whatever you could say right now.
He's hampered by his age, and it's not so much his ability, because it's very clear that much like Hector Sanchez, his ability is excellent right now. But because there's such a logjam ahead of him right now, especially with the guys that we're considering for backup catcher depth right now, it's just there's nowhere to put Tommy Joseph higher than Double A.
He's young, he's got power, he's got pop. He looks good. He'll get his shot somewhere.
He's only 20.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be 21 in October.
He's going to get his shot. I mean, kid's born in 91. Jesus. Oh. You know, this is like sad, just like thinking about that. The
91.
Yeah. The people playing baseball that I'm talking about and watching are so much younger than me. Oh. All right. So let's quickly talk about some of the injury stuff going on. We know Wilson's been feeling better. Sanchez has been a little bit in and out day to day, but you know, his hamstring, it's kind of sad to start talking about this already. This is Hector Sanchez. But it's kind of sad to start talking about this already I realized as I was talking about that, it probably sounds like I'm talking about the other Sanchez. But it's kind of sad to start talking about this stuff already. Luckily it's somebody that we're not going to see probably anyway. So real news is, look at the guys that we, you know, like Vogelsong, somebody like that. You know, where are those guys at? We know they're coming up, you know.
Well, and I mean, Sanchez has gotten into a couple of games still since the hamstring injury. This was earlier in the week. He seems to be recovering from it okay. I think he hit a monster of a home run yesterday, from what I remember hearing. I mean, I feel like any given game has the opportunity to be the, like, Joseph and Sanchez bring the boom show. You know, sort of like out of nowhere, they'll start just knocking balls everywhere. And Sanchez, I feel like the hamstring doesn't sound like it was too serious, but the nagging injury thing, I feel like it comes up every season and it just never ends well.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Joseph have been kind of making it interesting for Buster Posey. He's got to be looking back there going, hey, guys, I'm the young guy who everyone's talking about. Come on now. Is there any other big injury news that we need to talk about out of the spring training so far? Is there anybody we're really keeping an eye on that we need to take a look at?
I mean, everybody seems to be on track. Freddy Sanchez, they're estimating he's going to start at second base in a couple of days. No setbacks. He was supposed to start, I think, today or tomorrow, but they just want to give him some more prep work time. Bochy's estimating Vogelsong is going to get as many as 3 starts this spring, so it sounds like he could be back pretty soon. It's 2 to 3, depending on how they use their off day. And prospect Charlie Culberson, who's a second baseman most of last year, has always kind of had his numbers come and go. You know, last year he was a 259 in Richmond, before that a 290 in San Jose. He broke his finger right before camp, so he's just about set to hopefully get into some games before the end of spring training. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see him.
Cool. Now, there's been a couple of cool little games here. We talked about the Hector Sanchez 2-home run game. We got the Joseph, and Cabrera's hit a couple dingers as well, so some cool stuff going on. The Giants are running more, and they're hitting more home runs right now than they have been previously. I know it's spring training, but still, I feel real good about that. I'm hoping the Giants run this year. So let's talk about letters from the listeners. We have another thing from the Grubby Glove. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, so this is Michael from the Grubby Glove, and I mm-hmm. met him, of course, at FanFest, and I've been keeping tabs on his blog, and he's been listening to our podcast. So he sent out an email to a bunch of bloggers and us. I don't know if he included you guys on that. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I was in that one. I think he might have just sent it to our podcast email, which is mail@torturecast.com, folks.
Yes, there you go.
You may get read on the air as well, even if it's not for as good of a cause as this email, which we'll now talk about.
Exactly. Because of the cause, I thought it was worthy to include in this podcast. But basically, he just had an idea, which I thought was a good one, so I thought I would pass it along here on the podcast. But it's all about Brian Stowe. And so he wrote in his blog, he had an idea Why don't we, instead of, I mean, you know, most of us go to a few games, 10 games, 20 games a year, is to use one, the funds, the money that we would normally use for one game being tickets and beer and food and parking and everything. And instead of going to that game, go ahead and donate to Brian Stowe. And so he has a nice article up on the Grubby Glove, and we'll put that in the show notes. And of course, you can reference the Stowe Fund at support4, that's the number 4, brianstowe.com. So I just wanted to throw that idea forward.
That's a really great idea, because it really is. And his reasoning behind it is really cool, too. It's like, Brian Stowe went to one game, and you know, this is what happened. And all you have to do is not go to one game and maybe catch it on the TV and help out a guy who kind of, you know, he almost lost everything just by trying to go see a baseball game. And it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's really not that big of a sacrifice if you think about it. So
definitely, especially if we're in a sport where there's so many games.
Yeah. Yeah, skip a game, help out Brian Stowe, and maybe Brian Stowe won't have to skip any more games, you know? Maybe he'll get to go to some more, so.
Yeah, I'll donate money for opening day since I can't get tickets to that anyway.
There you go. I can't even go that day. Yeah, pick a day that you're already going to work, you know?
Yeah.
And just say, what would I have spent if I went to the Giants game? Remember, think about how you got to get two beers every time you go to the beer
stand. You never
just
get one.
Yeah, you got to get two. So that's like $15 a pop. That's at least three trips, right? So you're looking at maybe like $60-$70, something like that, right? Make it happen, people. We'll definitely put that in the show notes, and I think I'm going to do that myself. Let's talk about our favorite guys. I, you know, Ben, I know you picked this guy last time, right? But
I did, but he's good enough to pick again.
I'm keeping the love going, man. I love Gregor Blanco. I love this kid. I just like fast people. I really do. And, and you know, he's just a lot of fun to watch run the bases. And, you know, he's kind of having a pretty decent spring. I mean, he's hitting .474. Not only has he stolen five bases, but he's hitting .474. So keep it going, kid. I'm rooting for you. And he's also one of those guys. I do think this guy potentially could get on the roster.
I think he has the best chance out of any of the non-roster invitees of getting on the roster right now. He has shown off this
He's
camp.
A weapon. He's a weapon that we could use.
Oh, he is
and,
a weapon.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the kind of player that, you know, he changes games. And I mean, we look at Darren Ford, you know, and what he did for us at the end of 2010. I feel like Gregor Blanco is that plus a little bit better of a hitter.
Yeah, so, you're seeing all of that, definitely.
yeah. So put that to, like let's get some of that speed with the ability to actually, you know, take a plate appearance now and then. And it's pretty exciting to think about. So he's definitely my favorite guy right now. Ben, what about you?
Favorite guy. I am going to have to go with Brandon Crawford, actually. Well,
a sexy, you know, choice from you, the Ben Lee.
Well,
the ladies love this kid.
It's the lustrous hair.
It's true.
Now, Crawford really has gotten to show off with the glove this time around. And we've all seen that. We all kind of, you know, when a ball gets hit to Crawford, you just kind of go, yeah, that's done. It's not even.
But you also want to watch it get done, too, because he's so smooth out there. It's just fun to watch, you know.
And I don't know that we've had a guy that's been that much fun to watch since I think one of the Giants writers was saying probably since Chris Spire.
Well, we had Omar Vizquel, his twilight, but that he was still fun to watch, you know.
Yeah, but what I'm most excited about, though, and this is more of a good for him at the moment until we see it translate during, you know, once with the starting lineup, but Crawford is starting to hit. It's something that he was getting a little more comfortable with at the end of last year, and we're really starting to see it now, is that he's hitting with a lot more regularity. I don't know if it's partly because teams don't know how to deal with his newer approach, or if pitchers are just kind of still trying things out and he's taking advantage of mistakes, but Crawford's always had a good eye. His bat is starting to catch up a little bit, and we don't need it to catch up a lot. You know, the Giants would be really wise to say, Crawford is it. Stick with that. Just run Crawford out there and, you know, occasionally give him a rest, but just run Crawford out there, even if he's batting 220, 210, 200, maybe not like, you know, 103 or something. But, I mean, just give him some time. Don't make him worry about the hitting, and it'll come more naturally. If you make him worry about the hitting because you're constantly having someone look over his shoulder, you know, somebody like, I don't know, Joaquin Arias, who's probably not going to hit a lot better. If we just give him that safety net and say, look, it's you. Figure it out. You're going to be fine. I think that the bat's going to come. I think it's there. I think that we need to give him some time to barrel it up. And I think that we're going to start seeing the 220, 225 Brandon Crawford that we kept wishing for last season.
And it's, hey, by the way, going to have some growing pains, though, too. But,
absolutely.
Yeah. But it's part speaking of it is, I think, that as fans, we have to not tear his head off for hitting 200.
Agree. agree.
If he's still doing that glove wizard stuff out there, because that's going to save a ton of runs in and of itself, and that's almost as good as contributing a few to the run total is taking a bunch off from the other team.
Yeah, absolutely. Chad, what were you going to say?
You know, obviously, it'd be great if he can hit a lick above 240 this year. And I've always known he's a great defender, but I hadn't seen that YouTube video of when he was with Richmond. And
Camera
crew went out in the infield during practice and basically just, yeah, filmed him doing all those trick plays. That was incredible. And he did that, you know, with probably a 20, 30 minute shoot. It's not like he's like, oh, let me try that play again for the 10th time. I mean, you could tell he was just nailing play after play after play between the legs, over the shoulder, blind, backhanded, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
that
he's got talent.
Incredible.
The kid's got talent. And, you know, if you got that kind of hand-eye coordination required to field that way, you should be able to figure out how to hit at some point. So hopefully that's what's happening right now. He's hitting over 400 so far in spring training. So, Chad, what do you got? New favorite guy.
Cabrera, I mean, he's obviously has a history. He hit 300 last year, so I'm sure he's going to hit 280 this year minimum, but it's just
200
nice
hits. I just want to say that. 200
hits, yeah. But it's just reinforcing and satisfying to see that, you know, he's there just attacking the ball. He's already got three dongs this year, hitting over 500. Yeah, I know it's spring training. It's early, all that stuff like that, but he's not coming out of the gate cold. It certainly looks he looks comfortable at the plate.
It's,
so
it's promising, which we needed after the career that Cabrera's kind of had history up to now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going with him.
All right. I like that choice as well. Let's hate on somebody. Chad, I think you're the only one who has anybody to hate on right now, which I feel weird about. I feel like I'm a hater.
I'm a bad guy here trying to hate. Yeah, like I'm a hater.
I'm a hater though too, Chad. I spent
all of work being angry today. I can't do it right now.
Ben hates 500 people right now.
At least.
All right. Well, I'm going to focus all my hatred towards the new animated home run statue that the Marlins are installing in their brand new stadium this year. Okay. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet.
I'm taking a look at it right now because I feel like I'm going to hate this as well.
Oh my God! It is. I thought it was a joke.
I'm afraid to look. I'll have to post a link later, but I'm going to be sorry about it.
I honestly thought it was a joke, but when you see their colors, their logo, and everything else, you kind of go, okay, I can see where this is going.
Oh my gosh!
That's real. That image you're looking at. Well, that's an artist conception, but this is actually an older article. But I've seen more recent updates to this, and it has not changed. It is sticking with this animated design, where basically it's impossible to describe to anyone listening to this podcast that hasn't seen the statue. Let me just put it that way. But it's going to be around 30, 40 feet tall. And instead of, say, like the Big Apple has the, you know, literally the Big Apple rising out at Mets games, or, you know, the Brewer sliding down the slide, you know, for home runs, little cute things like that. This monstrosity is actually going to activate with sculpted Marlins on a wheel flying over palm trees, water cannons, and just this whole cacophony of Miami Vice Dayglow colors erupting from this thing. It is an embarrassment to baseball. And I'm really shocked that the people involved with the Marlins Stadium, yes, I know they're trying to bring the South Beach flavor and the unique look that every, you know, stadium tries to incorporate. This is way over the top.
But you know what? Just, the Marlins are the one who brought us Scott Stapp's Marlins song. So can we really expect anything else? I should probably post that. We should post that in the show notes as well. Have you guys heard that? The song that Scott Stapp did?
No, I have.
Oh, my God. Okay.
It is staggering.
It's amazing. It is the most ridiculous thing ever. So I will
hunt down a YouTube clip and I will get it up into the show notes.
I think it ended up like the real video got posted on Funny or Die because it's so ridiculous. All right. So I'm going to agree with you, Chad. I'm going to hate on that as well. And let's talk about why we're going to win it all this year. I'll start us off. We're going to win it all this year because we're starting to show that we're going to run a little bit more. I know it's spring training. I know Bochy's just saying, hey, we got these young guys who are playing. This is what they can do. We'll let them run. That's what they're going to show us that they can do. But I feel like this is going to translate to the season. And I feel this is what happens when you run more. It doesn't just, you know, yeah, you'll get thrown out, and yeah, you'll get erased off the base paths every now and then. But we're not the team that you should just sit around and wait for the three-run homer on. We're just not that team, and we aren't going to be that team. So I feel like it's really important to do the things that you can to improve the guys' chances at the plate, and one of those is the potential of running. Whether you run or not in an at-bat, if you act like you're going to run, if you've proven that you will run in the past, it changes the at-bat. It takes the pitcher's mind off of the batter and puts it, you know, on the entire field. You got more than one thing to think about. It kind of changes how the whole at-bat takes place. So I feel like just running more, just being a team that runs more, makes us more dangerous and more potent on offense. So I feel like Bochy, you know, yes, we know that he's not generally known as this type of manager, but I do feel like there might be a little bit of a shift this year. I think we're going to see we have more speed. I think he's going to want to use that. So just
we're not going to be the 87 Cardinals.
No.
We're going to have more speed than last year.
So. Yeah. We're not going to be a lot of teams that had a lot of speed, but we are going to be better in that respect than we have been.
Well, and with Bochy, I think that means we're going to see a lot more hit and runs because he doesn't like just straight steals. But a lot of the guys are getting the green light to run. I mean, Chris Stewart stole a base the other day.
Yeah, but even they don't even need a straight steal. They just need to know that if they feel they can take that base, that they should. You know,
yeah.
It's that type of thing. You don't even have to put the steal on. Just give guys the ability to go out there and make a decision for themselves because they know more than anybody else whether they can make it or not. You know,
and guys like Blanco have already shown they've got a real solid instinct for when that's true.
And then you look at a guy like Cabrera's. Cabrera's got more speed than we've had, you know, in that position for a while. And also you got Pagan. So there's a few guys now that are going to give us a little more speed. Whether it translates into a ton more steals or not, just the threat of speed, I think, makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ben, what do you think?
All right. So since we're still in spring training, I'm not going to take this category seriously yet. And
what are you talking about, man? We're tied with the Yankees right now, dude.
We're also tied with the A's, man. That's high. That's class right there.
I prefer not to think about it that way.
we're ahead of, well, everybody. So
we're
I don't
not
know.
Not ahead
I can't
of
really...
anybody. we're not behind anybody either.
I don't know where we are. I'm having an existential crisis.
We're tied.
So I got to say that it's this concentration on speed is I think it's going to be a big focus for us this year. I think that concentrating on speed is it's going to be really the one area that I think we see taking us all the way. This idea that, you know, we're getting the bats together, we're getting the pitching together, we've got so much catching depth, and the thing that we really just want to keep working on is speed. I think this is finally going to manifest itself when in a quest to really add some speed in that. Just anywhere on the base paths, I think it's going to be a big deal in probably around middle to late July when Brian Sabian cashes out and drops all of our trade window money on Usain Bolt. And
he'll be like Washington for the A's.
Hey man, Al Davis did that. Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, just, you know, it begins hiring track stars to jump on the base paths and just run. Whether or not they stop and lean may not matter. They're just Bochy is actually going to come out of the dugout with a small cap gun to indicate when they need to steal.
All right, I dig it.
Like it.
I dig it. Chad, what you got?
All right, so obviously we missed you last podcast, and we kind of went a little long with the subject of the new wild card and the new playoff system. And no matter how much I hate it, I hate it mostly for the format, not necessarily that they're going to 10 teams.
That's right. I didn't get a chance to pitch in on that conversation, man. That's a big deal, dude.
That's a huge deal.
It's a huge deal. All right, I'll have to carefully compact my notes together for the next podcast, and I'll get back on. I got some stuff to say about that. All right, so go ahead.
But it was interesting to look back at the last 17 years and just do the what if thing. I know, you know, things would have played out differently if there really was a second wild card. Teams would have, you know, managed their lineups differently. The results probably would have been changed slightly.
Of course.
But the fact of the matter is, the Giants would have been. In the playoffs three additional times if the second wild card had been in place then, including as recent as 2009. So I think it's quite possible this year if they have another year like last year, although last year the Braves would have been the second wild card, the Giants are going to have their struggles this year. I think they're definitely going to have some injury bugs. I mean, how can they not? I really do stand by my prediction that it's going to be Terrio and what's his face
up in the
Fontenot in the middle infield by August. So I think Posey's bat last year would have made up the four games. I think the injury or injuries this year is going to provide kind of that same difference, you know, three, four, six games behind the division winner, if that's truly what happens. So I do think that second wild card is going to be their saving grace this year. It's going to come into play for the Giants this year.
I dig it. Well, that's going to do it for this show. By the way, I just mentioned Washington. for the A's, who was the guy that they got, who was the sprinter. I don't know if you guys remember that. That wasn't Ron Washington, if anybody thinks that was. It was Herb Washington, if anybody remembers that guy. Yeah, he was actually, they tried this. He was a sprinter.
I thought you were referring to Ron Washington.
No. Herb Washington. Look him up. It's a pretty interesting story. It was Charlie Finley who grabbed this kid.
Of course it was Charlie Finley.
He wasn't a baseball player at all. And they basically pulled him in as designated runner. All he ever did was pinch run. And he was a sprinter, a world-class sprinter. But the problem was he actually wasn't very good at stealing bases because he just didn't have any real talent for it. You know, like, it just wasn't in his blood. It wasn't something he had experience doing. He just didn't have the feel for it. So kind of a failed experiment.
7-foot-6 guys. Oh, he's got to be a good basketball player.
He's got to be good. Yeah, George Mirasan probably going to score 40 a game. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
No.
All right, so that'll do it for TorchCast for March 11th, 2012. Getting ready for the Giants 2012 season. Real excited about that. I want to encourage everybody to email us. That's mail@torturecast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are @TorchCast. You can follow each one of us individually. Chad King is @ChadK21. Ben Lee, the Ben Lee, is @FriedDuck. And I am @WillyDill. So make sure to follow us individually as well, because, you know, we might tweet a lot about the Giants on TorchCast, but we also do it on our own as well when we forget about how we have a podcast. And I encourage everybody to visit TorchCast.com. Check out the blogs that are up there. Great place to kind of go and get your fix on Giants stuff if you're looking for more than what you get from the Chronicle, which I'm sure you are. You know, they give you stuff, but we give you more. So that's going to do it. Episode 23 of TorchCast in the books. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we will see you next time. A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter @TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.